This is a podcast from Empower. For more information and other downloads, please visit www.empowerunlimited.com. Hello, I'm Martin Pentecost, and I've spent the past 15 years or so pioneering various techniques and practices in a range of personal development methods. Known for my unorthodox approach, I use a mix of science and spirituality to help others create profound change in their lives. My intention in this series of podcasts is to introduce you to some of the ways you can transform your life and make a happier future for yourself. In this episode, I'd like to share some of my experiences from the realm of V-psychic mediumship. I spent 5 years as a professional medium, working on paranormal events in Britain, Europe, and North America. I often describe myself as the world's most skeptical medium, and it was this uneasiness to simply accept the traditions of the psychic industry that led me to create the V-psychic skills. To give an insight into what I mean, I'd like to read you a chapter from my book, V-psychic. The Psychic Warrior: Assertion, Strength, and Confidence. Now, I am not one for the term protection. In fact, if you were to ask any V-psychic medium about my biggest bugbear, it would probably be the word protection. For reasons that will be revealed in due course, I rarely use the word, favouring the term assertion as a much healthier option. However, if there were one location that I could be persuaded to require protection against, it would be St. Briavel's Castle in Gloucestershire. Affectionately known as St. Bees, the castle is now used as a youth hostel, and, having stayed there on many an occasion, I can assure you it is well worth a visit. From the sinister oubliette and dark, shadowy grounds to the many rooms that now act as dormitories, the castle is one of the most active centres for paranormal activity that I know of. Nevertheless, my reasons for needing protection are not really anything to do with the castle itself, more to do with what seems to happen whenever I visited. On one of my first overnight events at St. Bees, I'd been conducting a vigil in one of the dormitories and was feeling a little frustrated, having been calling to the darkness for almost an hour. The thing was, not only were my cries of "Is anybody there?" failing to provoke any response from the dead, the living were hardly effervescent with their interaction either. It is a common misconception that spending a night in a haunted house is all creaks and moans, objects flying into one's face, and spectral presences that scare the willies out of the poor unsuspecting visitor. On most organised events, it is more a question of tummy grumbles and yawns that break the silence, which was one of the motivating factors for me when I chose to reinvent the typical event into a V-psychic extravaganza. Towards the end of the vigil, I decided that it was time to retreat for an early coffee break, so I asked the group if they were ready to end the vigil, and still there was no response. At this point, I began to wonder if they had A. fallen asleep, B. left the room really quietly as a joke, leaving me to talk to myself for an hour, if only they knew that was a regular occurrence for me, or C. some deathly quiet phantom had done them all in, one by one. I decided it must be option A, so after a final "Is anybody there?" more in the manner of a personal joke than anything else, I called to an all-pervading void that I was about to put my torch on. There was a sudden shuffling sound as I flicked on the torch to reveal a room full of people all sitting upright and alert. Tough crowd. I clambered to my feet and ushered the still unusually silent group from the room. As I watched them pass, I became more and more certain that something had happened, something I was completely unaware of. We made our way to the base camp, and people served themselves hot drinks before scurrying off to various corners of the room. By now I was of the mind that either this group was exceptionally quiet, or something very strange was occurring. Soon we were joined by the remaining attendees who had been conducting a vigil in another part of the castle. They seemed much more upbeat and rambunctious than my group, who, like little lost statues, remained quiet. As the groups mingled and began to chat amongst themselves, I ventured into the corridor to arrange some biscuits when I realized that one of the men from my group was following me. I stopped and waited for him, as his demeanour suggested that he wanted to speak with me in private. "Hello there," I chirped as he approached. "Can I help?" It was at this point I noticed him grasping his video camera, and my heart sank. You see, I would go out of my way for anybody that needed me to. I've been known to invest vast periods of time helping people conquer their challenges, offering help and support the best I can. However, when it comes to dust and the photography of such subject matter, I have very little time. Certainly, on the standard paranormal investigations, there were three pieces of invaluable technology that many people felt the need to spend most of their time fixated upon. The first two were often supplied for the group, and these were EMF meters that often squeaked and squealed like a Moog synthesizer, and the other was a thermometer which shot a laser onto the ceiling, wall, object, or person that you wanted to know the temperature of. 30 people, equipped with laser beams and portable sound effects, can often share an uncanny resemblance to a bad 80s pop video than a paranormal event. The final piece of essential technology for many people is the camera. Now, personally, I don't mind video cameras. It's the digital cameras with flashes that I'm not fond of. This is mainly due to the fact that when a digital camera touches a person's hand, they lose all cerebral capacity to understand the simple statement, "Please can you warn us before taking a picture," because flashing in the dark is not pleasant, particularly when it's full on and in the face. Ahem. But honestly, there are only so many times you can look at an artistically snapped dust particle, either drifting or streaking, or using its sophisticated stealth abilities to transform itself into a face, a hooded monk, or a bushy aspidistra with small occasional table, and say, "Ooh, what a fascinating picture of dust. I'm not sure what it is, dust. Maybe it's something, dust, but it could be a dust particle. It's dust." This is paranormal investigator speak for, "It's dust." There, I said it. But you know, it's tough when somebody looks so happy with themselves because they took a picture with a spectral cat poo in it. It's really challenging to purposefully darken their satisfied glow. Anyway, back to the fellow chasing me with his camera. Resisting the temptation to curl my lip and go cross-eyed, as is my wont whenever a camera is pointed in my direction, I waited patiently to be shown the puppy rampant with artistically positioned stickle bricks. Dust. What I was shown shocked and embarrassed me in ways that I have never been shocked and embarrassed before and since. Not dust. The curious silence that pervaded my previous vigil was retrospectively shattered by the sound of a penny plummeting. The thought that I had just spent an hour calling, "Is anybody there?" to a room full of people who were busy watching two of the group make a wildlife program on one of the dormitory beds was not something that happens every day. I mean, I certainly wouldn't get all amorous when there are people with night vision technology about, despite my innate sense of mischief and a rather naughty streak. "I just thought you should know," the gentleman proffered, in an attempt to remove the gaping death maul I was aiming towards the camera. Forcing my jaw shut, I managed to thank him on the way up before standing there for several minutes contemplating such questions as, "Did they respond in some way when I asked if anyone was there?" and, "Should I go back to the room and make the bed?" Eventually, I decided the most positive slant I could place on this rather hideous incident was that you certainly do get more bumping and banging in a night for your money when on an event with me. I have not used this rather tasteful slogan as a marketing strategy as of yet, though watch this space. The important thing to mention here is that this was not the end of the night's humiliation. Oh no. Having slipped into a repetitive cycle of habitual double entendre whenever around the group from the vigil, I then proceeded to have a 20-minute discussion with a clicking radiator. During this conversation, I established that the radiator was male, named George, and was born in the 1850s. I had not been able to ascertain how he felt about the sudden swath of laser beams that descended upon him from multitudinous points of origin. Now, I'm not sure whether any of these events had a karmic connection to the highlight of the night, whether St. Bees just wanted a laugh at my expense, or if I just know how to throw one heck of a good party, but for some reason, this particular investigation was about to get even more interesting. Over the years, I have collected a vast range of hilarious poses that I've seen people contort into when frightened. These usually consist of wide-eyed and wonderful, tonsils, and the rather curious ability to be petrified to the spot in all areas except for the arms, which usually flay about manically. Always an infinite source of amusement for me, I have compiled a top 10 of favourite poses, which I often demonstrate when teaching warrior skills. What I usually fail to mention is firstly that I use the top 10 as a way of embarrassing people into not being frightened, and secondly, it's usually me hiding round the corner that causes the terror in the first place. Well, how else do you think I get such a close-up view of these contortions? A medium has to get his kick somehow. Anyway, my personal favourites are the Wallace and Gromit, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, the Feed Me a Giant Chocolate Button Now, and finally, when I grit my teeth, I pee myself. Should you ever see me on the street, or at some salubrious occasion, remember that I do requests, so please feel free to come over and ask me to demonstrate my current top 10. I am very pleased to state that I do not have a top 10 poses of what happened next on the event. In fact, there is only one pose that a person gets the split second before they are about to use the contents of their stomach as a projectile in your direction. It's rather like the humpback of Notre Dame meets a high-powered sprinkler system, without the spinning, but retaining the dodgy eye thing. Now, if ever you want to witness a rather large gentleman doing the Highland Fling, there are two things you can do. You can visit the Highland Games, or you can upchuck in my direction. The two are fairly similar in resulting aesthetic, except in my version there's usually more Kate Bush, flapping arms and girly screaming, and less sporran, which some might say is a blessing, because knowing me, I'd probably make a complimentary therapy out of it. The interesting point is that I always thought when somebody projectile vomited in the movies, the fact that it was green was simply hyperbole. Yet, I can state from experience that on many occasions, it is actually green, and is remarkably close to the shade of pea soup, believe it or not. I say on many occasions because this was not the only time I gazed into the eyes of Quasimodo, which reads like a euphemism but is actually a rather accurate description. There were many events at St. Bees where people vomited, usually around the same area, and before you say it, no, I did not spend all night every night frog-marching the group around that particular area to see if it would happen again. We had tea breaks. The point is that sometimes a location or dynamic can affect a person in peculiar ways, and this is where assertion comes into its own. Whether it be fear, disruption, panic, or a random spattering of green slop, the warrior skills can prevent many a mishap or situation where terror steps the wrong side of exhilaration. From the earliest instances of oral folklore, we have been frightened by stories of ghosts, monsters, and demons. Those who walk the earth in perpetual torment or exist between heaven and hell. Even today in films and television shows, we are often captured by the idea of some other realm or limbo that harbours our worst nightmares and the things that terrified us as children. Those who go bump in the night have created a pulse that we all respond to in some deep primal way. For the dark, the unknown, the out there all roused a survival instinct in our ancestors. When corporeal dangers lurk beyond the safety of our homes, we needed our fear to help us react and counteract those dangers. The very real fears of our ancestors still lie within everyone at a vibrational and genetic level, hidden, deeply secreted within us energetically and physically. What makes our trepidation so real is its intangibility. We cannot grasp our fear of this other realm because it is hidden under layers of personal experience, other lifetimes, and endless vibrations. However, We merely need to encounter the suggestion of things that terrified our ancestors, and our own fears are triggered. These are as real for people today as they were for those that came before us. The dark, the unseen, the sounds that occur in the next room, the unexplained movements and changes in energy, the waiting, the watching. In locations of high paranormal activity, all these elements remind us of the physical fears that our ancestors faced every day and night. When we encounter these elements, we either attempt to find a rational explanation or we trigger an emotional reaction, fear, terror, panic. The particular psychochemical response we have depends on the part of the brain we are working from. Our left hemisphere requires a focus to achieve comprehension of what it is dealing with, so we'll initiate a conscious search for the offending source of the noise, change. In this instance, you will often see people start to look for a possible cause, such as a heating appliance, sensor lights, or some other people, etc. If the left hemisphere finds no answers, it will do one of two things. It may decide whatever happened is just imagination or a trick of the light, etc., or it may hand over to the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere of the brain cannot focus, so it tries to scan the entire area for something that might be out there. The right likes intangible. If the right perceives something, anything, that is not immediately explainable, it will permit the production of various defense mechanisms across the body, neurochemicals in the form of adrenaline, noradrenaline, and cortisol. These have the combined effect of increasing blood sugar, heightening awareness, raising the heart rate and blood pressure, getting your muscles ready for some form of action, and decreasing the rate of digestion. This entire process is activated without conscious interaction. People who work from the right hemisphere of the brain will bypass the logical response and go directly to an emotional chemical response. The moment this chemical soup is triggered across the cellular receptor system, our living matrix is pervaded with an overwhelming array of vibrations. Our nervous system goes haywire, and our psychic sense is often drowned beneath the waves of resulting energy. So with a view to maintaining confidence, strength, and assertion, we need to stop the chemical reactions before they even start. The first approach in any situation that you do not understand is to use conscious assertion as soon as possible to prevent a fear, anger reaction, or to counteract the results of that reaction if it has already occurred. Simply stop, center yourself, and focus on your breathing. Long, slow, deep breaths that cause the sides of your abdomen to expand will help you to relax. You can also repeat some positive assertion in your mind. For fear, I am assertive, calm, and in control. For anger, I am relaxed, balanced, and assertive. This routine is not necessarily the answer in every situation, but it will give you enough time to take charge of yourself again, so that other techniques can be employed. The main aim is to create a physical state for you to think, take stock, and decide upon what you are dealing with or what action to take next. Once you have given yourself time to control your fear, anger, and are able to think clearly, it is time to remember that the only reason you are having this reaction is because you do not know what is out there and have not been able to decipher any possible cause. However, your reaction is based on the logic that if you do not know what it is, it must be harmful or detrimental to you in some way. If you are working with energy, and if you understand how energy works, then you have absolutely no need to be afraid or angry. So by using the basis of our energetic understanding from previous chapters, let us examine what psychic energy can and cannot actually do. Subtle vibrations of energy can create sensory disturbances such as light, sounds, etc., create temperature changes, create physical illusions of being touched, hit, pulled, etc., create emotional responses, trigger energy alignment processes, EAPs, initiate processes that ask you to confront suppressed vibrations, bring something that is inside to the surface. Subtle vibrations of energy cannot cause you actual physical harm, put anything in that was not there before, stop you from changing your connection at any time, take control of you. You are in charge at all times. Contraindications. In these examples, we are referring to subtle psychic energy. Obviously, when dealing with electricity, radiation, etc., energy can be harmful, so be aware of this when working with more physical forms of energy. So why do people have the range of experiences if they are in charge of their energetic connections? Surely a person would not choose to have a nasty experience. Well, we do, on almost an everyday basis. Every reaction that has occurred in your experience will be within your current sphere of perception until it is repatterned. And this does not just mean events and reactions within your lifetime, but absolutely everything. If you encounter vibrations of energy, spirits, consciousness, etc., that resonate with vibrations you perceive, you can form a connection, and very often this connection will bring the perceived vibrations closer to your conscious awareness, producing the same chemical responses as they did in the past. For example, if an ancestor experienced a trauma of some kind, the vibrational memory of that trauma and their reaction to it will be within your sphere of perception. When you encounter a spirit that had a similar trauma, you will become aware of the trauma within yourself, and the reaction will be the same as that of your ancestor, unless you consciously repattern the reaction to stop it from occurring. As soon as any connection is formed between two corresponding waveforms, they lock into each other and become one. The amplitudes of both waveforms become the overall amplitude of the combined waveform, making the energy more powerful and easier to recognize for the conscious filter. This increase in power creates a body-wide chemical reaction that is sensed by the nervous system. This is why we feel a very sudden welling up of emotion, usually traveling up towards the head area from the abdomen. It is at this instant that a conscious decision is required to halt the chemical reaction, and why the above routine is useful. Once you have tamed the reaction, you can then take a moment to try and understand what this energy form is and why you are reacting to it. This process is one of bringing the unknown to our conscious recognition and deciding what to do based upon that information. Our unseen friends. Guides, or potentials as they are sometimes called, are the cause of much debate and speculation. The idea that beings can often take human form, walk around us, and offer counsel is frequently unacceptable to many, whilst others absolutely believe this to be true. The fact is that science cannot prove the existence of guides one way or the other, so we are, once again, left with perspective, the idea that it is for the individual to decide what they perceive and which explanation of this perception resonates best with them. So some people may say that guides are energy beings that offer support, guidance, and assistance in our everyday lives, whilst others talk about higher brain functions, facets of the individual that are wise and offer support to the conscious facets. Either way, we are talking about energy, electrical thoughts, or energetic beings, both of which are entities formed from energy, that help us in some way. The imagery created from the terms is different, but both concepts have the same truth beneath them: wise energy. The objective of this chapter is not to debate the actual origins or formation of guides' potential, but to investigate the ways in which they can help us when we feel alone or unsupported. The simplest way of connecting to a guide is to simply ask for the connection. This can be done by requesting a guide, a higher being, my higher self, or the name of a specific guide if you know it. Once this is done, people often report a subtle shifting, movement, or change in perspective. Some see or hear their guides, whilst others feel their presence in the room. Some do not feel anything. If you are unaware of your guide's, higher being's, presence, ask yourself why this might be and attempt to shift to a place where you are aware of their presence. Energetically, we improve our connection to our unseen friends by learning what they do and implementing it into our own methodology. For instance, if you ask your guide to assert your energy against a particular environment that is frightening to you, Ascertain how the guide does this by consciously monitoring how it feels and what thoughts, sensations, sensory information you receive. Then use the results to activate the same assertion at a later date. By actively learning what your guides are doing and how they do it, you get closer to them and empower yourself. The tradition is often to passively rely on guides to do the work for you, but this has one huge drawback. As soon as you are ill, off colour, depressed, angry, lethargic, worried, in pain, etc., your connection lessens and can disappear completely. If you know what you are doing and comprehend the processes involved, even exclusively at a sensory level, you can use the techniques at any time and in any situation. Every time you learn something that a guide has shown you, you expand your vibrations and your sphere of perception, thus working towards greater layers of psychic potential, energetic power, and holistic well-being. The warrior within. Regardless of the location, situation, or specific event, we all have the ability to remain safe and stay in charge at all times. If you feel anything other than calm, relaxed, and in control, it is because you are allowing your body to react chemically to factors such as darkness, sudden noise, etc. We do not want to suppress these reactions, but to tame them so that our body becomes aware of what real danger is, a speeding juggernaut, and what real danger is not, a vibration of subtle energy. To tame our primal instincts, we need to find our inner warrior, the facet of us which remains strong, confident, and powerful, even when faced with potentially crippling fear. This can be achieved using several different yet complementary approaches. Energy cultivation, linguistic approach, repatterning, limiting beliefs, meditation, autogenic training, energetic assertion techniques, positive mental attitude, halting self-depreciation, regular practice, being extremely conversant with all the above. Our inner warrior is never controlling, aggressive, or ruthless. She is assertive, strong, nurturing, caring, and compassionate. He appreciates those qualities in you, and by bringing them to the surface, you will develop your psychic warrior in a very short time period. However, when working with psychic warrior and other more advanced techniques, it is important that you become active in your development. Passive methodology and attitude will not achieve the abilities you want to nurture. If you have ever seen a psychic medium too afraid to enter a building or in pain from some energetic encounter, etc., you are seeing somebody who is acting in a passive way towards their abilities, just letting them happen as opposed to developing in a positive way. By unleashing your potential as a psychic warrior, you will be able to handle any situation or location you find yourself in. Start to monitor your resistance to becoming strong and confident. If you hear yourself making excuses, it is because you are taking a passive role as opposed to embracing your strength. If you haven't got the time, do not understand, can't do that, feel afraid that people will laugh or think you odd, and so on, you are suppressing your inner warrior and therefore not taking active responsibility for being who you truly are. The warrior and the guide. Let us now integrate the concepts of inner warrior and our guide's potentials by looking from both the spiritual and technical perspectives at how these two forms of entity function to create a synthesis. We start with the idea that our psychic warrior is a facet of the self, existing inside our sphere of perception. Guides are outside our sphere and requiring some form of effort to connect to. This may be that we need to expand to their level in order to connect, or that they contract to our level. There are richer benefits to be had from our expansion rather than relying on guides coming to our layers of perception. Primarily, the reason for this is, if a guide comes to us, the information they provide will be more simplistic so that we can comprehend it. By evolving to the guide's layer, we develop our abilities to understand them on their terms. Think about a parent talking to a child, then imagine two adults having a conversation. To reach the various layers where our guides reside, we need some form of energy to expand. Our warrior self provides this for us, as she can give us the courage, force, and confidence to achieve those expanded perceptions we need. By nurturing our psychic warrior and enabling him to take an active role, we literally give her the ability to connect us to higher levels. If we look at this in terms of energy, our warrior is high amplitude, force, lower frequency, vibration, energy, whereas guides are higher frequency and can be found in various states of amplitude. Frequency and amplitude are interchangeable, in as much as we can use the force contained with high amplitude waveforms to increase frequency. As this occurs, the amplitude is lowered, and therefore its energy needs to be cultivated to increase the power of the waveform without affecting the higher frequency state. Once we have achieved a higher frequency, we can cultivate the energy of the waveform to increase the amplitude once more. This process continues as we increase frequency, expand our sphere of perception, cultivating amplitude to take us to the next step. Hence, our inner warrior is always lower frequency, but higher amplitude. The particular guides we are working with at any given point are of increasing frequency and amplitude. Finally, let us examine the concept of energy cultivation. Forms of energy cultivation techniques have been used for centuries by many different cultures. In basic energy work, we look purely at energy waveforms from a human perspective, meaning that we understand energy as traveling from one place to another. The technical term for this is vector waves. So we visualize breathing in some form of energy and securing it within our bodies, usually at the lower Dantian, abdomen area. In energetic terms, however, we understand that energy does not travel, it simply changes state. So in order to increase the energy within our sphere of perception, we are the ones who must travel. By expanding our sphere, we naturally cultivate the energy within our perception, thus giving ourselves the connection to an abundant source of energy. If energy is everywhere, there cannot be more energy in one place than there is in another. You simply have to be in more places. Whilst terminology is often seen as an important part of psychic development, linguistics is usually ignored. However, when we take into consideration that the words we use in conjunction with psychic development practices can actually improve or hinder our receptivity to energy, it becomes a priority to ensure that our linguistic approach is noted. Nearly all the words we use, with the exception of adjectives, create reactions at a physiological level in the body. These reactions affect us in various ways and could be equated with ripples in a pool of water spreading outwards and creating further ripples. An example of this could be the word dangerous. If somebody tells you that a practice is dangerous, your unconscious and physiological reactions may cause you to be nervous about undertaking that practice and therefore affect the way you do it. Some people may actually jump at the chance of doing a dangerous practice. Of course, if that same practice were described as joyous, you would inherently become more relaxed as you conducted the practice. Some of the terminology used in traditional paranormal research and psychic development is quite detrimental to sensory practices, and there are also other terms that can knock your abilities to virtually zero. Closely related to linguistics is the imagery we use as part of the development process. If the visualizations we use are based upon positive polarity language, we will be more likely to get better results and feel safer. If the imagery is based upon negative polarities, we may feel unable to sense things and can even feel afraid or vulnerable. So it is important to work with positive polarity words, words that create positive reactions, at all times. What are positive polarity words? Well, there is a huge range of positive and negative polarity words that it would be impossible to list them here. However, we shall be looking at some examples later in this book, with two examples listed here. Negative polarity. Protection, to protect oneself, visualizing a shell or cloak. These are all negative polarity, because they encourage the idea that we need to protect ourselves from something. We only ever protect ourselves from things that are bigger and stronger than we are, or that are unknown and intangible. By using the word protect, you are automatically placing yourself in a weakened position. If you add to this a shell of light or cloak visualization, you are creating imagery that can be penetrated easily or removed from you. Positive polarity. Assertion, to assert oneself, visualize light or energy that radiates from within. When we assert ourselves, we are usually doing so with an equal, usually human, and thus are creating the reactions that say, I am in a strong position here. This unconsciously makes you stronger and more assertive. When the visualization comes from within and radiates outwards, it cannot be taken from us or penetrated. Negative polarity. Negative energy, energy that is bad for you. Energy is energy is energy. This phrase is very important because there is no such thing as negative energy. Negative energy literally means that something has a negative amount of energy. This in turn leads to the falsehood that something can exist without energy or even with a deficit of energy. No form of subtle energy is bad for you or has negative results. It is your reaction to energy that causes the effects you may not find comfortable or enjoyable. Positive polarity. Negative reaction energy, energy that causes a negative reaction, contractive energy. A vibration of energy that causes you to feel sick, emotional, or frightened may cause somebody else to smell roses or feel wonderfully happy. Hence, your reaction to any given aspect of energy is what is important here. Negative reaction energy, or energy that causes you a negative reaction, has a greater degree of positivity and accuracy. Plus, it instills the understanding that by changing your perspective, you can change your reaction to the energy you connect to. Previously, we explored the concept that there are various communicative networks in the human body. Each of these creates a fragment of a dynamic system, starting with the neural network that uses pulses of electricity to transport huge amounts of basic information from one point of the body to another. Next, we have the perineural system that, along with the skin, digestive systems and other perisystems, forms a living matrix that coordinates the body's ability to heal itself. Finally, we have the chemical soup and associated opiate receptors that work together with the cellular tissue to create our emotional being. These networks are not independent from each other, and an action in one will cause a reaction in the others. Thus we see an interrelated system where electrical thoughts create changes in the ever-present waveforms in the perisystems, both of which stimulate the production of chemicals in the cellular tissue that in turn permeate further chemical reactions and biological activity. Of course, this also implies that the relationships work in other directions too, and this is exactly what happens as neuropeptides, steroids, and other ligands permeate our cells and bloodstream. These alter the vibrational responses of the perivascular, perineural, etc., and indeed the messages traveling through the neural network. Therefore, we see a dynamic being emerging, a communication system that is composed of interconnected parts, each of which affects the others in a complex and carefully balanced dance. In practical terms, we can see how this explains the relationship between the words we use and the effects these have upon our physiological systems. Depending on the associations we create between a single word and the vibrational, energetic, chemical reactions that occur when the word is used, we can produce habitual responses to words. For example, the word power creates interesting divisions in people's opinion. When asked to write a list of words that were associated with the word power, a diverse range of people responded with some fascinating suggestions. Some associated the words with domination, abuse, and suffering, whilst others see it as strength, confidence, and success. What was of particular interest in these results was that those who offered the negative polarity results were really shocked by the fact that they had omitted the positive, and vice versa. Logically, we know that power can be a good or a bad thing, but our feelings tend to align with one or the other. If a person has learnt to associate a word with negative responses in the dynamic being, they will develop a habitual reaction in the body upon its use. Individuals who are taught to associate power with a positive rush of endorphins will see the word itself as positive, whilst those who correlate power with the secretion of adrenaline will view the word with a negative polarity. Very often these associations are very subtle in their creation, and we can take into consideration factors such as second-hand responses to words, e.g. being in the same room with somebody who has a certain reaction to a word can imprint their response on others in the room, particularly those who are impressionable. We can also see that because some words sound or look like other words, we can link associations between unrelated words purely on the basis of the overtones created in sound or sight. What is vital to understand in this debate is that every single word you use has a reaction electrically, vibrationally, and chemically within the body. Over time, these associations become embedded within us so that we totally ignore the habitual nature of our responses. Without even realizing it, we can become a strong, confident, and effectual person, or bring ourselves to the depths of despair and depression just with words. Yet when we actively and consciously work against our habitual responses by replacing negative words with those of positive polarity, it only takes 21 days for our body to recycle its chemical connections and break the reactions. In just 3 weeks, you can use linguistics to create all manner of change in your life and how you function within it. As a footnote, it is beneficial to mention, by simply using words that suggest you possess a potent and accurate psychic ability, you will improve your capacity within 3 weeks. Once you have eradicated all words from your vocabulary that are detrimental to this process, you will see a lasting improvement.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast produced by Empower. To find out more, please go to our website www.empowerunlimited.com. Here you can find our complete range of products, and through our publishing site you can order books, CDs, home study courses, and find out about live events that Empower runs. Be enchanted.